everybody. Thank you, Tom, for the introduction. There's a lot of people here. I wonder if you're confused on what will happen here. The reason I'm giving this presentation is because Tom Garrett asked me to do so. He provided the title and just left me the fill-in part. And, you know, do whatever you want. And the word that is missing there is models. I didn't know till today David Clay, but the presentation that he made is just a perfect introduction for the presentation that I will make, in which I'll really emphasize annual perennials, but the use of models. I've been around models for a while now at this point. and it's worth looking what we can do with them, what we cannot do with them, and how we calculate those balances. So let's get at it. Sorry, you will have a 50% talk on models, huh? Well, let's make it quick. In this part, there is definitely the spotlight has fallen again on agriculture or agroecosystems because of both the pressure for renewable sources of energy, one of which can be biofuels, and the concerns about the food supply. No opinions on those concerns, but that's a fact that we do have. We are on spotlight. We haven't been in the spotlight for too long, actually, and the lights can be pretty bright, so we need to be really careful what we say, not to get burned. But we are really posed with formidable challenges. Keep increasing productivity, reduce the system's environmental footprint, and desirably do that at a low price, don't overtax, and don't touch the planet. So that's said without too much of a mocking tone, but it's pretty difficult. It's pretty difficult. Really, through history and today, the production systems around the world are quite different in terms of the combinations of crops, burned, having animals in the system or not. Very, 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 very diverse. I'll focus just on two very simple to go to the bare bones of some concepts: annual cropping and perennial C4 grasses. The annual cropping will be corn. and biomass sorghum, and the perennial C4 grasses. C4 grass it will be switchgrass, but in the way it is presented, it can be anything that can grow in the summer, that will put roots, that will put leaves, and that will go on for a long time. I won't talk about woody systems, although it makes a lot of sense for bioenergy production. For many reasons, it is stored on the ground. There are many good properties that are probably better than grasses. There are some cons, but I will skip that part. But this is a really important part. And why bioenergy or biofuel production will work is a very simple reason for that, and it's money. Is farmers can make money with it. It will happen. If they can't, it won't happen. The first increase in food and biofuel feedstock will probably come from cropping for grain production. David Clay already went through it: stover harvest, sweet sorghum production, and dedicated biomass crops, which is what we will know as hay, with a lot of adaptations, you know, but it's removing biomass from the field. This intensification and carbon fixation removal is a challenge. It has to happen removing without having erosion, avoiding carbon losses, preserving soil quality, using that broad term, and controlling greenhouse gas emissions. That's not easy to do. Really depends on the path. One thing is to fix CO2, other thing is to return CO2 back through combustion or respiration. Other thing is to retain methane. and that's a balance that needs to be made. It's not just the removal of carbon, what happens with it after that? and let's go back now to the models. In theory, we have the main controls of the carbon balance included already in models. There are many models. You know many of them, but they are included. So we work enough with it. If we really trust them, we should be able to do a lot of them. If we can't do these balances with the models, they need to be revisited and be done in a very honest fashion. So the objective is today will be to evaluate, with the aid of simulation models, the impact on soil carbon of annual corn cropping, biomass sorghum, and a perennial C4. Just really simple, really to the point. I use two models. One is called C-Farm, the other is EPIC. The reason, I know them well, both of them, so I presume I can give the proper way to their weaknesses and strengths. They stand for very different approaches for modeling soil organic carbon cycling. I'll go into it. And the authors have published papers with it. They said that they work. So if they work, let's see if they work. we try to execute the simulations with little supervision, as little as possible. There are very few works that do cold simulations with the models. There is always a tweaking here and there, and my aim is to remove that tweaking to zero, or else it's no longer a simulation model. So very quickly, first, let's remember what is organic matter, and I won't read everything, but it's really a complicated thing. It's a continuous of product from the kind organisms, excreta, exudate, sometimes char. What it is, we are learning ever more. What is not humic and fulvic substances. That concept is almost gone or totally gone. And most processes that affect organic matter formation occur at a nanometer scale, but we measure full soil layers. So we need to get real that these are really simplifications. On models, the first word, remember, complexity in models is rarely achieved without recourse to chains of assumptions. What it translates in reality is this: every time we sit down to code something, 5 minutes into it, we are making assumptions. And not a few, many, very many. This is the framework for the balance equation. This is very similar to what David has shown before. see if I can use this. Yes. This is the balance in which these are the inputs to the soil organic pool, and these are the losses of the soil organic pool. These little brackets here show that of the input of carbon, say, on the above ground part, 3 tons of carbon that are getting in the soil for a crop harvest, a fraction, that H, a fraction of it will remain. The remainder will be respire. Erosion is removed from that equation. In the case of the organic matter in the soil, let me see if I can get this back, which is this carbon in the soil, CS, a fraction will be lost. I'm not presuming first order kinetic. There is no reason to do so. The bracket here show that there is a function to calculate this K. And the equation looks good, but if you look at one of the inputs, say, let's estimate how much roots are there. Here is how the graph looked like. This is a review that Amos Walters did on shoot-to-root ratio of corn, and this is the variability that is for corn, a crop that, you know, we have been around this crop for a while now. This is the variation that is there. So we want to make, I'm going to show you, you can look at this variation, which is humongous, and the rates of carbon change that we want to predict, and you know, gives you something to think. This is the equation, but this is how the soil organic matter is. This is the turnover rate of this soil organic pool. It's not a fixed value. This fixed value here is a weighted average of this probability function distribution. There is not one rate. There are many pools, each one infinite pools, each one turning over at a different rate, and how much of it is there, we don't know. But we make guesses. Working with this, mathematically working with this, is downright impossible, so we make simplifications. One simplification is the Century model. This is the Century model as incorporated in EPIC, in which this continuous is discretizing three pools or four pools, and more when we consider the residues, but we said that this pool have fixed properties. You can see, now recall what I put there from Monteith. What was that? That you have to make a long chain of assumptions. That here we go, and this is just the carbon part. There are many parameters there. We can do something different. Is use a model with one pool, but that the properties of the pool vary. Instead of discretizing the pool, let's make the properties of the pool vary. So, and that's the basis of the model CIFARM. That's very similar. In fact, it's identical to the model that Clay showed before, with a few comments. So we selected a few sites for simulations. The reason I selected the sites were, on the one end, you know, they have some relevance for agriculture. On the other end, I have never worked with them before, neither with CIFARM or with EPIC, so there was very little room for contamination on my site, so I'll make it work. Let's see what we get. And the other is, College Station is relatively subtropical, warm and moist. Urbana is similar precipitation but a little bit colder, and Shelton, Nebraska is colder and drier. So we get a very nice combination. Here are the soils. One has a fair amount of clay in colestation. The others have less clay and a difference in sand. The system simulators are three: a continuous corn, which I run to steady state, we'll show you in a minute, biomass sorghum, and switchgrass. You may have not heard about biomass sorghum. What is biomass sorghum? It's a sorghum that is produced, not focused on grain, but to let it produce just biomass. Some of them don't flower or flower too late, and they have a very nice feature, which is that they keep growing the stem. So the sink is the stem, and that stem is tall. So I've seen one that we have in Temple is 3 meters tall. It was pretty dry in Temple this year, and it produced 20 megagrams of biomass. That's a lot. And some numbers that they can produce much more. So that's probably what we call a dedicated biomass crop. And switchgrass that you all know. The hypotheses here are very, very straightforward. One, changing above ground carbon input should change the soil organic carbon accumulation. That's very similar to what we saw in the previous presentation. So we can compare corn versus sorghum, which one returns more or leave less, and we can divide it in roots and above ground biomass. The other is a little bit more subtle, is that changes in soil moisture can control soak accumulation. Why is that? The soil carbon turnover depends on the moisture in the soil, and we can change for how long the soil is dry or wet depending on the water usage of these crops. that's where I think amol is really useful. You can do that with a lot of certainty. So in a sense, keep the soil dry. That's the point, to avoid the decomposition. And the root inputs control soak accumulation, and this is very critical because there is very little credible information on input of carbon to the subsoil, to the soil, and its distribution with depth. Very little to none. So we started some experiments in that direction. That is, this is by far the weakest point of these models. So weak as to render them really. I would say that you have to use them with a lot of caution. Here are the results of the simulations. So we will work on this graph for a while. Almost all the information is here. This is there is a little piece of information missing here. This is College Station, this is Urbana, and this is Shelton, Nebraska. This is C-Farm, this is Epic. Let's work our way in this direction. What we did is we run the corn system, which is the black line. I run it to a steady state. I didn't guess the initial soil organic matter content. Run the model and see where it will go. Have all the inputs for above ground, below ground, all the information is there. But this is what you get. And I can use this as a baseline because I have to start somewhere. This is soil organic matter in the whole profile, the entire profile. How does this value compare with actual soil samples? Pretty decent. It's in the upper end of what you see in continuous cropping in that area with the soil. Pretty decent. When we simulate biomass sorghum, in which it grows, and we remove 90% of the above ground biomass, some of it returns because of senescence, it remains more or less the same in this case. When we go for switchgrass, in which we do remove above ground biomass too, and it's not that different than the sorghum, it's just a little bit less, soil organic matter climbs up. When we go to you can see now you know the story. We repeated the same in Urbana and repeated the same in Shelton. We did the same with Epic. So first question, these two models, we claim that they both work well. Do they give similar answers? They do not. They come close in College Station. I was pretty surprised to see that there wasn't much storage, comparing this with this. I wouldn't know which one is right. Huh? I wouldn't say a word about it. In Urbana, they both work in qualitatively, they did what you expect them to do. Remove carbon, go down, add more carbon, go up. However, these levels are much lower than soil organic matter samples there. I review a couple of papers, and really, in this drummer soil, you get to 140, 123 megagrams of organic carbon in the whole profile. So we are down 20 or so. In Shelton, the differences between the two models are just striking. They don't look in the same place. I check if I wasn't making a mistake. I wasn't. It doesn't. In this case, this one hits the nail. It's just perfect with data recently published. Epic didn't, and I don't have a good answer. This can be chance. You know, who knows? Can I modify parameters to get this right? Yes, I can, but that's not valid. That's not how it should be done. End of the story. So let's look at some details here. Here is for 1 year, 1 year of the simulations, for the whole year, three components of the valence. The input, the crop growth is not there, so at some point there is a crop growing here. This is maize or corn, the crop growing, and there is a harvest. What we see here is residue respiration is the line. The colors are not very happy, but it's this line. And you see residue or plant material respiration, which means why it looks like this is, let me start at harvest. There is harvest. What was a standing biomass become residue. The residues start to be decomposed. And you can see here is the emission that is decomposed. A fraction of it is humified. It goes to the soil organic matter pool. It's that gray line. And that's why one tracks the other. This bumps up here. This is rhizodeposition that is very quickly decomposed. At least what the model tells. And this brownish line here is the soil organic carbon respiration. Soil organic carbon respiration, not the residue. So, one observation that many of you know, but it's a good take a look, is that the flux of carbon is really dominated by the residues. It's a lot more. So much more as to dwarf it. Any error, if we were to measure this, like we do an error analysis, any error in these components will outweigh the flux within a year from the soil, totally. The carbon sequestration or loss or gain is this difference between these two lines. So there is a net loss during this period, you know, losses in summer, replenishes a little bit in the fall, depends on the year, you know, it gets cold, gets dry here, the residue stands there and it decomposes here. So we, you know, if you look at the years, you get a lot of all the combinations. So the difference, the carbon sequestration rate, when you say 200 kilograms per hectare per year, you gotta put it in this graph. It will look, if we divide it by the number of days, it will look like a tiny, tiny line down there, you know, going down there. Not to forget. The other component is, let's look, if we remember that equation, let's look at the components of this equation. On the one end, let's look with depth in that very same soil. Over the year, in that meter and a half, what was the decomposition factor? What is what I call the decomposition factor is how suitable for decomposition was the soil, each layer of the soil, for the corn and the switchgrass. And they weren't that different. That means that the soil moisture and temperature wasn't that difference for this year. There is a little difference here. The decomposition rate is 2% in the top layers in the corn. That's because of the tillage effect, much less so in the switchgrass. And that's what makes the difference. The humification rates are quite comparable. The difference there can be explained on the basis of rhizodeposition and other considerations. But let's move fast. Yeah, you know, in short, they are less different than I thought they would be. These factors here. So let's summarize the discussion. First, the soil organic carbon change in storage is a very small fraction of the total annual flux. It's less than 1%, very little. Uncertainties in all components of the carbon-nitrogen balance make accurate prediction of the accumulation rate, or the accumulation rate, very difficult. Soil texture effects and location effects not necessarily well understood. Initial conditions and the qualitative response. First, when we put the initial conditions like I did, we will get the qualitative response, you know, at switchgrass, increase, lower. But the initial conditions weren't right compared with the actual data. So if we go with the right data, you won't get neither the qualitative nor the quantitative response well with the model. carbon cycling below the plow layer is clearly not well understood. The concluding remarks repeat a little bit what we said before. Regarding the three hypotheses that I put there, yes, the models respond qualitatively well with perennials, comparing perennials and annuals. The carbon balance with depth and the understanding of its components is less clear, and quantitative assessments can be really challenging. A word of acknowledging people that work and help me get this done at different stages: Javier Marcos, Sean Quisenberry, a programmer, Norman Mackey, who's sitting in the audience, and Jimmy Williams, that needs very little introduction. That's all I had to say. Thank you.